From the studios of Boise State Public Radio, you're listening to Idaho Matters. This Thursday, Dr. Tamara Vennett-Shelton will be looking back at Chinese medicine and the influence it's had on the United States over the last 200 years. Discussing her most recent book, Herbs and Roots, A History of Chinese Doctors in the American Medical Marketplace, she'll explore how we decide what reputable medicine looks like, as well as the role that cultural stereotypes play in impacting who we trust to perform that medicine. So joining us today to talk more is Dr. Tamara Vennett-Shelton herself. I want to welcome you to the program.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
So Tamara, can we just start off by giving us a little bit more history about Chinese medicine and how it was introduced to the United States?
I think there's a really common misunderstanding that when we're talking about Chinese medicine in the U.S., we're thinking about the craze for acupuncture that began in the 1970s and mm-hmm. took off as part of this countercultural movement. But in fact, Chinese medicine has always been a part of the American medical marketplace, even before there was a United States. Colonial Americans, so folks who had come to what's now the United States, part of as a sort of annex to European imperial exploration, they were already familiar with Chinese medicines. They were already very much interested in Chinese medical practices and were experimenting with importing them to the colonies that became the United States. So part of my book project really was to uncover the persistence of Chinese medicine throughout American history.
So this really is a part of history that isn't discussed that often. Why do you think that is?
I think that American medical scientists have been really successful gatekeepers. So starting at the end of the 19th century and increasing in the first half of the 20th century, there was a kind of consolidation of medical science around a certain set of theories of disease transmission, around a kind of standard medical education curriculum, and around a set of licensing statutes, right, that drew this line, and increasingly a kind of clearer and less porous line between those folks who would be considered real medical authorities and those who might be considered what we would call now probably complementary or alternative, what they would have called irregular or unorthodox medical practitioners. And I think these gatekeepers, medical scientists who effectively monopolized the American medical marketplace, were culturally, intellectually inclined to exclude practitioners of Chinese medicine. And so why we don't know this history is really a testament to how successful they were at exclusion.
And when we talk Chinese medicine, you mentioned, you know, this craze back in the 70s that started with acupuncture, but it goes beyond that. So give us an idea of what that term Chinese medicine would incorporate.
Traditional Chinese medicine is like an umbrella term. And I should probably pause here to say, even the term traditional Chinese medicine, or there are really kind of two ways of thinking about it. One is the capital T, capital C, capital M of communist China. This is Mao's reinvention of what traditional Chinese medicine could mean in a modern and communist regime. But if we're thinking about the lowercase T, C, M, it's really an umbrella term for, dozens of different therapies. We're talking about acupuncture, certainly, moxibustion, also herbalism, which is principally the subject of my book, but also things like bone setting, more ritualistic or talismanic healing, reading people's facial structure to predict their health outcomes. I mean, they're just, as I said, dozens and dozens of different kinds of healing practices, different kinds of therapies that might fall under a general category of traditional Chinese medicine. And these are some that are very ancient, you know, thousands of years old, and others that are newer and more modern in their valence.
What's one of the most interesting things that you discovered during your research?
For me personally, I think the most interesting thing, and this will kind of speak to my maybe limitations as a researcher, is when I started working on this project, I was working with acupuncturists in Oregon. Actually, I was working in Oregon mm-hmm. as a professor of history. And my first introduction to this topic was with a set of actual practitioners of acupuncture. And they kind of told me a set of things about Chinese medicine that I then carried into my research. One of which was that all Chinese medicines had to be imported because of the specificity with which they had to be procured. That, you know, Chinese medicinal herbs had to be grown in a certain place, harvested at a certain season, under a certain moon. And so they really kind of led me to look at my research with a certain expectation of importation, right, transplantation. And then over time, what I realized is, in fact, practitioners of Chinese medicine in the United States were not importing everything. They were importing a lot, but they were also mm-hmm. improvising and experimenting. So what I ended up finding in my research, which was not what I was expecting, was the degree to which practitioners of Chinese medicine were learning from other medical knowledge systems that they were encountering. Certainly, Euro-American medical science, but also indigenous medicine is another thing that they really had a lot of kind of awareness of and were an appreciation for. We also see a lot of experimentation with native plants to North America and also native animal species to North America, mostly because of the need to do substitutions. So substituting certain kinds of snakes that were found in China and used medicinally for things like a rattlesnake, which is native to North America. And they were foraging and planting and growing medicinal gardens with new and native species. So I think that degree of just like absorption and experimentation and freedom with what constitutes or what can constitute Chinese herbal medicine was something I wasn't conditioned to look for, but I found.
So I want to talk a little bit about Chinese immigrants and laborers here in Idaho. We have a very long history. So I'm curious if you found in your research how Chinese medicine was perceived here in Idaho.
I do have a lot of great stories about Idaho. Now, there's some things that are just pervasive in the American West, right? The American uh-huh. West was an extractive economy in the late 19th century. It was a kind of on this sort of boom and bust cycles that extractive economies tend to experience. And so Chinese immigrants very much followed these booms, right? So you wind up in Idaho with Chinese immigrant populations coming for gold rushes and other sort of mining related work. And of course, when they come to Idaho, they bring their healers. Everywhere there were Chinese immigrants, there were Chinese doctors. So in some ways, Idaho looks very much like the rest of the United States. It also looks, or the rest of the American West, I should say, and it also looks mm-hmm. like the American West in the way that non-Chinese miners, so principally kind of white miners in Idaho, did experiment with Chinese medicine. They would see how, for example, Chinese miners were able to avoid certain outbreaks of infectious disease. So take something like the flu or, other kind of sort of quotidian infectious diseases. And non-Chinese miners would go out and seek services from Chinese healers to deal with those kinds of ailments. You also have in Idaho examples of very successful, very entrepreneurial Chinese herbalists who set up principally serve a non-Chinese clientele. So I think the most famous of these is C.K. Ah Fong, and who, along with his sons and his grandson, ran a very successful pair of businesses in downtown Boise. Really for decades. I mean, kind of from about the last decade of the 19th century to the mid 20th century, the sort of three generations of Fong family pharmacists, they were catering principally to non-Chinese residents of Boise.
You know, I think it's so interesting that, the history of this, right? Because when we fast forward to today, there does seem to be more incorporation of Chinese medicine or, Eastern medicine and that philosophy. I mean, I know even in my own life, I really do like a lot of that. Mm-hmm. And have you found that as well? That, I mean, it's so interesting, I think, to see where we've come from, you know, from the research that you've done to really trying to, you know, not allow it to even be here or to say that it doesn't work. And now we even see traditional doctors, right, MDs, who use some of this in their own practices.
Absolutely. And I think that that practitioners of Chinese medicine have well understood that a lot of their appeal to non-Chinese patient consumers is that they are an alternative to, let's call it Western style medical science, that we as patient consumers often look to these alternative sources of medical knowledge, of healing practices, when we feel like we are not being served by kind of mainstream, medical science set of practices. So I think we have come a long way, because I think that now our more mainstream medical care providers recognize that patient consumers tend to do this, tend to look more broadly. I like to say we tend to sample from the global buffet of medical practices. But I think that we still have a long way to go, because for the most part, traditional Chinese medical therapies, things like acupuncture, moxibustion, herbalism, are not covered by insurance. So it remains kind of available to a set of patient consumers who have disposable income, who have a certain amount of affluence and ability to pay out of pocket for these kinds of therapies. And I think that is likely to change. I think we're kind of moving in a direction of more inclusivity, more of a sense of these medical practices as being not alternative, but complementary, right? Or that's something that we should look to integrate into a kind of whole body, holistic health approach. But I think we still have a long way to go.
Well, I want to thank you so much for your time today. We've been talking with Dr. Tamara Vinette Shelton about the history of Chinese medicine in America. She will be talking more about this and her book, Herbs and Roots, at Boise City Hall this Thursday. That's March 2nd at 6 p.m. Thank you so much for your time.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
Race might be a hot topic right now, but for so many of us, talking about race is nothing new. On the Code Switch podcast from NPR, we go beyond the headlines and we go deep. Listen now.